Everyone, our next session is about to begin. Can I have everyone back at the table, please?
Exactly.
Thank you.
For the transcript, Saturday, April 6th, 10:45 a.m., locking of a domain name, GNSO, function room 8.
Singing now, and we'll have an interesting conversation. We've got this little kind of chat here about.
Danny boy. Thanks a lot.
You get me some decent whiskey, I will sing it.
All right, see you tonight.
Okay, be careful, because I'll hold you to it.
Right, Danny, I think you're on mic. Get the recordings ready.
Oh, is it? Sorry.
Right,
so, everyone, the session that's about to begin is the locking of a domain name subject to UDRP proceedings. Our presenter this morning is Michele Nalon, who is chair of the working of the group.
Yes, thank you, I am. Good morning, everybody. Ladies and gentlemen, girls and boys, we're talking about UDRP. I know it's a terribly exciting and sexy topic that you're all really excited about. I know you are. The IPC is delighted with this. It's such a fascinating topic. And I flew halfway around the world to talk to an empty room. I know I get such a kick out of this. I can start, okay. locking of a domain name subject to UDRP proceedings. I mean, this is such a wonderful title. We decided to shorten that just to be UDRP lock, because the rest of it was too much of a mouthful for those of us whose first language is English, never mind the rest of you. As you may recall, there was discussions a couple of years back about potential changes to the UDRP, and it was ultimately decided that this wouldn't happen. However, we were able to get agreement that there should be a review around this specific area of the UDRP. So, GNSO Council initiated a PDP limited to the subject of locking of a domain name. How do I get this? Ah, there we go. Locking of a domain name subject to UDRP proceedings. At the moment, there's no requirement to lock names in period between the filing of the complaint and the commencement of proceedings. There's also a lot of areas where the definitions are severely lacking. The concept of status quo, for example, is kind of left open, which causes headaches for everybody. Within the working group, we conducted a survey among the registrars and the UDRP providers to get a better understanding of what they were actually doing. We've all also trying to get some input from various SOs ACs, and we have now published our initial report, which I know you all have been looking forward to and you've all read. Just nod. Yes, you've all read it. It was absolutely fascinating, wasn't it? Marika put nice little pictures in there and it was great. Anyway, most of our recommendations, you shouldn't find them terribly exciting or controversial. It's more about codifying existing practices, and we're not expecting to make any major changes to anything. It's more to do with bringing clarity. So it's all about, you know, basically minor changes. So what's in our initial report? There's lots and lots of words, and there aren't many pictures, but beyond that, we have 11 preliminary recommendations to clarify and standardise the process for locking of a domain name subject to UDRP proceedings. And if I have to say that sentence more than once today, my poor head will explode. So, first off, we're going to definition of locking. Next, we've got requiring the registrar to apply the lock, previously defined, within 2 business days following the request for verification. We're also recommending removing the obligation for the complainant to notify the respondent at the time of filing, providing step-by-step clarification of requirements of parties, and there's also a recommendation to develop educational and informational materials to assist in informing affected parties of new requirements and recommended best practices. Next steps and further information. So, we've got the initial report. As I said, fascinating read. It's wonderful. It'll keep you, excited in the evenings. And we're having a session on Thursday from 9 a.m. to 10:30 local time here in Beijing. And we'd love to see you all there. And if we get lots of nice feedback from you, we will review it and we will use it for our further deliberations. Thanks. Any questions? Good morning, Mr. Newman.
I always got to ask some questions.
I know you're going to ask me some questions. I'll try to answer them, or I'll punt it to somebody who can answer them.
So thank you for that. I actually did read it, so it's good work. One of the questions I had is, would the same principles, and I think the answer is yes, but would the same principles be applied to names that are locked under the new URS by registries? And if not, why not? You're shaking your head no. So
could you explain? Sorry.
So under the
explain for those of us who A, aren't lawyers, B, and B, aren't lawyers.
Or just tired.
No, I'm not tired. I just don't actually know what the hell you're saying.
Under the URS registries, the URS for new GTLDs.
Yes, thank you.
Uniform Rapid Suspension. Registries are required to lock domain names down that are subject to URS proceedings at the very outset. It kind of skips the registrar level.
Okay.
So the definition of lock, all of the other things that you guys are working on, would that have any applicability to...
It might be... Well, I'll let Marika go a bit further on this, but from my perspective, yes and no. Yes, in that you might want to look at some of the wording we're using, but no, as in the two aren't directly linked. Marika might be able to elaborate further.
Yeah, this is Marika. As far as I understand, I think the URS rules themselves already have some details and have a specific definition in there what locking means on the URS. And as you said, I think the process there is different because it's the registry that directly locks the domain name and not the registrar, which is involved in the UDRP. But having said that, and maybe looking as well at Dan, if there would be support from the GNSO Council to apply a similar process or look at this as a guidance for the URS procedure, I'm not really... I don't know why it wouldn't be able to apply the parts of that or what would be applicable to that process as well. And I see Christine Dorain from NAF just posted in the chat as well that she says that I'm right, the URS already codifies a practice. So it is already in there. But of course, in the longer term, if you would see that this should be the standing practice or standing principles for any kind of locking, I guess, I don't know, that probably would require a new PDP, or I'm not really sure, but throwing all the difficult questions at Dan, but we may need to come back on that one.
Thanks, Marika. So I would just have to, I think it's a really good question, and we should just take it on a notice and go back and look at the URS. It's not, all the details aren't fresh in my head right now, and see, but it's a good question.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to have us do the work twice. If you guys are doing the work anyway, and you're there, and you come up with some principles, I mean, is that something that the group looked at anyway? Or I would guess no.
It would be out of scope for us.
Well, I mean, looked at as far as helping you give guidance.
No, because the thing is, one of the things, as chair of the working group, one of the things that I've had to deal with is making sure that the scope of the working group didn't venture outside the boundaries that it had, that were defined. Because one of the things, as you know, was this entire UDRP review was quite controversial as a topic, and there were views about various different things. So we were given quite a narrow remit, and we didn't want to go off commando and start looking at things that weren't within our remit. I mean, we're not stupid, Jeff, but the point is, we're trying to sort this one narrow thing out. We didn't want to get into, things that weren't directly related to it.
No, I understand. I'm just trying to think of how we as the GNSO could increase the scope just to... Because I don't want to have to do this all over again. If there's some general principles that can be gleaned from that, it would just be awful to just... It would show our inefficiency at policy if we can't just somehow bring it in.
Joy here from Non-Commercial Stakeholder Group. Thanks, Michaela. I think clearly no good deed goes unpunished. Having come up with excellent set of recommendations. There's a desire to take them further. So well done. Picking up the point, and not to get too distracted from the report you're making on your specific issues, perhaps the point that Jeff's raised could feed back into some of our policy and implementation discussions that we've just had. You know, where we see good implementation and where we see where it might be of relevance or use, perhaps that's something that we can offer back to other processes. But perhaps we can just reflect on that. I'm just conscious that, you know, Michele's here to present his report, and I wouldn't want to be too distracted by how we might use it elsewhere. Thanks.
Just responding to that, I mean, ultimately for me, speaking personally, I mean, I can't speak for the entire working group, but I mean, if the GNSO were to come back to us and say, hey, you know, we want you to do X or whatever, I assume there's some way for us to do that. I honestly don't know. I'd have to look to Marika. I don't know how that would work.
Would you like to comment, Marika? And then I've got Phil in the queue.
This is Marika. It may make sense to first actually have a look and see what's currently in the URS rules to see if it's already very well defined there. Because as we said, I think that, you know, the process for the URS is different than the UDRP. And I think as well it's really focusing at least the UDRP are really trying to clarify or codify existing practices. And maybe noting as well that, you know, Christine from NAF is very closely involved in the working group discussions on this process, but also, you know, they're the first provider for the URS, and I'm hoping, or I'm sure, that she has taken back some of the discussions we've had in clarifying probably the process there. So it may be worth, you know, Jeff, for you having a look at the URS and really trying to see there, do you believe there's anything missing or unclear that is being clarified within our initial report, and based on that, indeed, it may be worth considering, should there be a recommendation to for the working group to also look at whether certain parts of this should apply to the URS, and if so, should then indeed the charter be expanded, or, you know, should it be another way or mechanism to implement or recommend that?
Yeah, but I think the thing here as well is that, you know, you need to give us that guidance. We're not going to go off and start kind of studying the URSs. I mean, ultimately, people complain about the length of PDPs. I mean, this PDP has been going on for, you know, a reasonable length of time. The sooner we're able to finish it, the happier some of us will be. If you want to expand our scope, that's fine, but I'm not going to direct the group to start looking at the URS until we get some directive from the GNSO Council to do something in that. Please don't ask me to do it just kind of randomly. I'm just going to say no.
I've got Phil and Wendy waiting patiently, but Marika, it sounds like you want to come back briefly with just one more thing then.
Yeah, this is Marika. Just to note that Christine has actually posted the language from the URS in the chat, which says, the URS says that within 24 hours of receipt of the notice of complaint from the URS provider, the registry operator shall lock the domain, meaning the registry shall restrict all changes to the registration data, including transfer and deletion of the domain names, but the name will continue to resolve. The registry operator will notify the URS provider immediately upon locking the domain notice of lock. And maybe just to note as well that, of course, the reason partly why we're doing this work on the UDRP is that because in practice it became clear that there was a lot of confusion and different approaches by registrars and how to enact a lock. As the URS is not active yet, it may make more sense to indeed see if the current rules work or are clear enough, or at the point where indeed we do already have this review of the UDRP as well as all the other RPMs. I don't exactly know the time frame. I think 1 year after delegation of the first UGLD, I don't remember exact time frame, but that is already set in motion that will happen at that stage. Maybe that's as well the point then where you could look at this part and see how it works in practice and whether indeed the rules are specific enough and clear enough for complainants, respondents, as well as the registry operators.
Thanks, Marika. Phil's been very patient. Can
Yeah, thank you. Philip Corwin, I appreciate the courtesy of being able to ask a question. I'm speaking on behalf of the Internet Commerce Association. I'm planning to write a comment letter on this, and I don't think I have any problem with the general notion of having uniform rules for lock, and certainly I'm not in favor of cyber flight by bad actors upon learning that a complaint's been filed from the complainant. My one concern, I'd like to know if the group considered it. Let me give you a concrete example. I'm off, besides my lobbying work, I'm associated with an IP law firm in Washington. Recently contacted by a party, an IT services firm that, as a courtesy to a client, had transferred some domains and had listed themselves as administrative contact and had forgotten to change that, and got hit with a UDRP because they didn't know the client was involved with a lawsuit with somebody else, and a UDRP became part of the lawsuit. They were very traumatized, and they got the notice from the complainant on the day from their law firm. As a practical matter, that most complainants, when they now notify the registrant, it gives the registrant, and the complainant is the one who decides to file. They pick the form they're going to file in. They decide what time of year they're going to make the filing. And the complainant officially has 20 days upon being notified by the arbitration forum. There was more than a week gap between the time they got notified by the complainant's law firm and the time they got the official notice from the arbitration forum. They used that week to understand what the UDRP was, to understand what options were available and what filing fees and all of that. So effectively, by not having that notice even after the lock is put on, it somewhat detracts from the registrant's ability to file an effective response.
Phil, I'll stop you right there, and sorry for interrupting you, but I think you've misunderstood what we're actually talking about in that. What we're actually talking about is to do with the timing of the notification, not the notification itself. Because the concern at the moment is that if the registrant is notified of a UDRP at the same time as the registrar is notified of the UDRP, the locking down of the domain may not happen quickly enough. The domain could bounce to another registrar. Now, what we're effectively looking at doing here is changing the sequence of events slightly so that the domain is locked against changes and then is notified. So you still have the time to do all the filing and everything else.
Well, I understand that, but, and correct me if I'm wrong, I just looked at the report again. It said the complainant is no longer required to notify the registrant, and then it said that the registrar has control, who locks the name, may but is not required to notify the registrant. So there's no requirement. The only one who's required to notify them is the arbitration provider, and that comes later. Am I wrong on that, or is it? I think it's permissive and not mandatory.
I think Marika would be able to clarify the exact wording, but if the wording is giving you that impression, then I would say that, okay, maybe we need to look at how it's worded. I mean, the spirit of it, the concept, the idea behind it was, I'm the offended party. I discover that somebody has gone off and registered Black Knight dot something and is using it in some way to infringe on my company's rights. I go and I file a UDRP with whoever. What I don't want to have happen is for the domain to start bouncing across multiple registrars
That's
rubbish.
Not a result I would favor.
No, of course not. But that's what we're trying to resolve. Marika can clarify that, but you know, what you're talking about, if that's an unintended negative consequence, then okay, please. Good. If that's the way we put the wording in, please provide us input, but understand what
we're
trying to achieve.
I just wanted to raise the concern. I look forward to speaking with you and to commenting on the report.
Clarify that, I think, try to.
This is Marika. I think Phil's understanding is correct, because what we're basically trying to change is that there is not a notification, or that there's no required notification by the complainant to the respondent at the time of filing, indeed to avoid cyberflight, which in practice may mean that indeed there is a lesser time. I mean, there's still the minimum 20 days, which is under the UDRP rules or the policy required, so that doesn't change. But I think in practice it could mean that there's a gap between when the complainant files the complaint, at which time it before would have notified the respondent, and now it may not do so. So the only official notification would come at the time that the UDRP provider, after the lock has been applied by the registrar, notifies the respondent. So again, the working group did deliberate that in quite a lot of detail, because indeed there is this balance between giving upfront notification or sufficient time for a respondent to indeed digest or understand what's going on, but at the same time counter the risk of cyber flight. Again, it doesn't prevent a complainant from notifying the respondent at the same time, but it's what the working group is recommending, that it's no longer a requirement to do so.
Yeah. I don't want to take more time. I would just note that once the domain is actually locked, at that point, the registrant would be notified it's been locked, so they're not surprised, and they don't lose a week to 10 days that practically exists now for the vast majority of registrants who have no plans for cyberflight and use that time to figure out what a UDRP is and to find competent counsel to assist them if they're planning to file a response. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Phil. I think the concern is noted and understood. I've got Wendy, who's been patient. Wendy, you look. Are you still in the queue? Yeah. And then Petter.
Thanks, Jonathan Michele. Another question about the sequencing here. If I'm reading this right, the locking and potentially reveal of the registrant is behind a privacy and proxy or proxy service take place before verification of the complaint that it meets any of the technical requirements and before receipt of payment from the complainant, which sounds... Am I reading that correctly?
I will say possibly, because I think I know where you're going with this, and I understand it, and I'm just kind of like, oh, God, no, here she comes. I should have seen that coming. Marika can probably clarify that. I mean, one of the things we did look at in length, and we had multiple conversations, really long ones, and there were lots of lawyers involved, and my poor little head, it felt like it was going to explode a lot of the time, was around this thing about the payment thing and the likelihood of non-payment and all that. So I do recall that in I'd actually hoped to kind of blank that out of my life, but unfortunately I can't. Marika could probably clarify a bit of this.
Yeah, this is Marika. So if I understand correctly, I think when a UDRP provider receives the complaint, they do a quick check just to really make sure it's not a bogus complaint. Yeah. I mean, the official verification, the admin check is done later, but they do a quick check to make sure it's not, you know, Mickey Mouse asking for a UDRP complaint. But then what the working group has debated is that because currently there is no there are no accredited proxy or privacy services, so we can't really establish any rules because we don't know who the parties which parties it would apply to. So what the working group has said is basically if there is any reveal or of underlying registrant data that needs or that needs to be done, it needs to happen before the final lock is applied. And it's really up to the agreement that the registrant or the proxy customer has with its services in these circumstances. So it's up to the registrar to make that determination. If there is this agreement, it's maybe as an in-house service. If it's provided by the registrar, they will probably have in their agreement a notice saying if a UDRP complaint is filed against you, we will reveal the underlying customer data. So it's basically at this stage, what the rules say that if there is a if the registrar is aware of a privacy proxy service being in play and noting that at this stage there's no official procedure because we don't have accreditation, but we hope that this may be addressed as part of an accreditation program for proxy and privacy services, the registrar needs to apply an initial lock to make sure it doesn't get transferred out, but may make any updates before it applies the final lock within the 2 business days to reveal the underlying customer data of the proxy service. However, what is prescribed in the UDRP rules, if no changes are made, but at a later stage it becomes clear that they are dealing with a proxy of privacy service that wants to put the underlying customer forward, that needs to be communicated directly with the UDRP provider and the panel. There are no rules that are prescribed here in this process.
Thanks. So I think that's a problem that we'll need to address further, because we've made very clear in the domain name registration side of things that you don't get service until you've paid, and I think the same should be true in the UDRP case. You don't get service of discovery of the person behind a privacy or proxy registration until you've paid, because that can at least serve to rate limit the abuse of this process. We know that processes such as this can be used to reveal an anonymous speaker without intending to pursue it all the way to conclusion. And this report discusses various terminations short of conclusion. So I think at the very least we should require payment before they get these services.
through
that. Michele, did you want to respond? And Christina, I just want to check. Christina, was your hand up there? So Michele's going to respond, and then Christina's going to come.
I'm going to do two things. Well, I'll respond very, very briefly. I would ask Wendy that if you want to submit comments on the specific aspects of this and raise the concerns, that's great. But rather than telling, just if you can provide us guidance as to what you would like to see and how you would like to see this done, it would be helpful. Because, I mean, the thing from our perspective, for a lot of the registrars who are involved in this are just looking for a clearer set of guidelines to follow. I mean, ultimately, for me as a registrar, the UDRP is just a pain in the neck. I mean, it's a necessary evil. I'm obliged to do it, but all it does is cost me time and money. All I want as a registrar is just to have it done in such a fashion that I can just get on with what I actually do, and I'm not getting involved as an arbiter of anything. I know exactly what I'm meant to do when I'm meant to do it. So having nice, clear, this is what you do, this is when you do it, these are the steps, that would be helpful. Marika can probably provide a couple of other clear things, and then there's Christina over there. Hi, Christina. Good morning.
Yeah, this is Marika. I just wanted to read a comment from Christine Durain on Wendy's comment on payment, because basically she says, yes to Wendy, payment is received 99% of the time simultaneously with the complaint. Providers cannot do the full technical deficiency check until the information comes back from the registrar.
I'll just add very briefly that it's, of course, the bad actors that I'm most concerned about, and even if they're only 1%, that's a concern.
You guys knew I'd find a way to get back to this table eventually. Two questions, and I guess first an observation with regard to Wendy's point. You know, I think realistically as a practical matter, and Christine Durain's comment I think bears this out, you know, the likelihood that a potential UDRP complainant is going to put in the time and the resources necessary to put together and file a UDRP complaint with no intention of pursuing it is generally pretty low. Having said that, you know, I certainly understand the concern, and I think that there's got to be a way to kind of make it, to put some mechanism in place that would avoid the concern that Wendy seems to have. But I guess my real question is, I'm trying to get a sense of, given the reference to the registrar survey, and granted it wasn't the broadest sample of respondents, but given that, you know, the kind of true majority, a simple majority of respondents said, yes, we lock, I think it was within 12 hours, and then the remaining respondents said within 2 business days. I was trying to get a sense as to where the recommendation came from to go with that longer 2 business days, and was wondering if perhaps that was some kind of balancing with the elimination of the requirement that the complainant notified the respondent. Just trying to get some background as to where that time frame came from.
I'll be perfectly honest with you. I can't recall the exact rationale behind that. I think it was more of a kind of a compromise. Marika might have a better memory of where that came from, the 2 business days. I think it was a practical thing, though, Christina, in that some registrars are very, very big organizations and have dedicated staff who deal with all sorts of wonderful things. And then there are those of us who don't have dedicated staff. I mean, you're looking at the legal team for Black Knight. I'm also the head of marketing. I'm also the managing director. I also drive all our policy. You know, anything with kind of legal lands on my desk ultimately. I do have an abuse team who aren't me, thankfully, though I'm also in charge of them. So, you know, if anything involving UDRP, you know, Michele does sleep. And it's the same for a lot of registrars, that we don't have these dedicated teams. So it was just giving us enough time to get it done, working on the basis that we have a fixed time, we have a fixed set of steps to do. Now, ultimately, your concern probably is the cyber flight, if it's not happening fast enough. But the reality is, you know that in reality, if you send something through to GoDaddy or to some of the other very large registrars, they're probably going to act in it very, very quickly anyway.
so you don't have this concern. But Marika can probably elaborate on this much more eloquently than I can.
All right, then I'm conscious we should answer this properly and then wrap up, even though we did start a little late. We've run over. Okay, sorry, Petta, I did pass over you, so yeah, okay.
Yeah, this is Marika. I do recall that I think initially we started out with one business day, but I think at some point we changed it to two business days. But I think particularly in recognition of the fact by removing the requirement to notify the respondent at the time of filing by the complainant, a large part of the cyberflight risk would be taken away by that. And then indeed in recognition of what Michaela said, allowing for some more time for some of the smaller registrars to maybe comply with this, allowing for two business days. But again, that's a maximum. It doesn't mean that registrars cannot lock earlier or can lock when they are notified by the complainant. This is really a kind of, you know, at the latest, you need to lock 2 days after receiving a request of verification, but it doesn't prevent a registrar from locking earlier or, you know, at the time if they receive a complaint from the complainant.
Thank you for that, and I would just have a suggestion that with regard to the final report on this, that to the extent that the two business days remains the final recommendation and the fact that the complaint is no longer required to notify the respondent, I think it would be helpful to just drop a footnote to indicate kind of what that compromise was, so that in the future going forward, to the extent that there's a need for further refinement, folks have a better context as to where that came from and what potential future trade-offs could be.
I suppose the other thing as well, Christina, is that we make it clear that the two are tied together. Because yeah, I mean, the thing is to say is, I mean, for me as well, it would be really helpful, you know, if for anybody who does submit comments to this, just rather than just saying, "Hey, we don't like this," just give us a rationale as what your concern is with it. Because ultimately, from our perspective, it's, you know, we're looking for clear steps. Because, I mean, very, very simply put, as a registrar, I'm not interested in being the arbiter of this. I am really not interested. I don't want to have to be the arbiter. I want to have a clear set of processes to follow, and that's it. The gentleman over there, what's his name, Pekka?
Petta, sorry.
Well, I can be really quick because I had two questions, and one was about the privacy proxy, and obviously there is no clear reply or solution on that, so we'll work further on that. The other one was, although we as lawyers want to have a fast lock, sometimes we also need a fast unlocking, and yet if you just can give a short comment on your solution there.
Well, could you clarify what you mean by what you're referring to with respect to unlocking, under what circumstances?
Well, when the parties have come to an agreement and there is no need to proceed with a full dispute resolution, as the domain name is locked, sometimes, as it is today, you need to proceed with the full process. And that could be actually very efficient if you could unlock it if both parties agree about it.
Oh, yeah, we did discuss that. Marika will step in now and be more eloquent than I am.
You're talking about settlement, right? Yeah, so this is Marika. So in settlement, we discussed it quite extensively as well, and I think there is already a process or an explanation there on how that should happen. There is a question in there, though, of two approaches, because there was discussion on the role of UDRP providers versus registrars in determining which settlement has been reached. So I think that's one of the issues where the working group is looking for input on, because I think in one of the scenarios it would be the UDRP provider directing registrars on this settlement has been reached and you now need to enact that in X amount of time, and I think the registrar then needs to confirm that with ICANN and the parties. And I think the other option was basically, I think the current practice is more that the registrars liaise directly with the parties and they inform the registrar of the settlement that has been reached. And again, I think there are two different views there. I think especially some of the registrars would like, I hope I framed this right, would like, I think, to take UDRP providers to take the role of the arbiter, or at least the party that will say this is the settlement and this is what you need to go and do to have an authoritative voice, instead of for the registrar trying to determine if they're really dealing with the two parties that have reached the settlement and the appropriate people that are providing them that information, or to leave it at the current state where I think UDRP providers saying, well, we see how it's currently working as fine, so we're not sure whether there needs to be a change. So again, that's one of the items where the working group is really looking for input on those two possible avenues, or maybe there's a third avenue to consider. So if you have any suggestions there, I think the working group would very much appreciate that.
No, thanks. I'll leave that up, because today it seems that it's a case-by-case solution, and it would be very good to have it in a policy.
Okay, great. So thanks, Michele. That's useful. It's clearly drawn out a couple of detailed items. You've heard very clearly from Michele that he would like constructive and formulated suggestions or proposals as to how things have changed, rather than objections to how they've been where they are now with the working group. Does that cover it, Michele?
Yeah, it does. I mean, we're having a public session. If people want to come along, I know it's quite early in the morning, but with the time zone difference for most of you, it's either really late at night or not that early. Again, with respect to the input, give us the input. But as Jonathan says, just telling us that, oh, I don't like this recommendation isn't particularly helpful or insightful. If you have an issue with a recommendation, explaining to us why you have the issue and what you would like to see in there, that would be a hell of a lot more useful for us. And again, to Jeff's point, if the GNSO does want to give us guidance and direction on other things, that's fine, but please make it nice and clear. Thank you.
Thank you, Michele, again. Thank you for the contributions and questions. We've let things run on a little bit. I've got to bring things back on schedule. I'm sure many of you will be very keen and interested to hear about the expert working group and the next topics, which are going to be presented by Marika. So let's just pause for a moment to stop the previous session and then go straight into the next one. So if we could stop the recording, I believe, on this session and then commence immediately the next session, the purpose of collecting and maintaining GTLD data and the expert working group update.